Radio St. Pete presents Typewriter Talks with Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit.
Hello, welcome to Typewriter Talks. This podcast features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. My name is Maureen McDowell, and I am the founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. On Typewriter Talks, we discuss all kinds of writerly topics, hoping to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Today, we are happy to welcome Tyler Gillespie. Tyler is the author of the essay collection, The Thing About Florida, Exploring a Misunderstood State, as well as two poetry collections, Florida Man Poems and The Nature Machine. He is a fifth-generation Floridian, co-founder of the Florida Local Artist and Writer Network, and currently teaches writing at Ringling College in Art and Design. Hello and welcome, Tyler.
Hi there. Thank you for having me today.
Yay. So let us know what you're working on right now.
So I am currently finishing up my dissertation. So I am in the coursework I've done with my coursework, my dissertation, and my program is in English, writing, rhetoric, and technical communication. And my dissertation is about creative writers who teach first year writing, which is one of the subjects that I teach at Ringling. So for my dissertation, I interviewed 26 different writers who teach writing. And these are folks from all over the country at different schools and different institutions like art schools, community colleges, HBCUs, R1s, and all of that. So I will be defending my dissertation on June 6th. I have a date. I'm excited about that.
Yes. So exciting.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just getting, you know, notes and feedback from my committee members, and I'll be revising and defending and then revising the dissertation into a book.
So what made you decide to pick that topic besides, I guess, personal experience?
So basically, not to get like too, you know, into the boring aspects of it, but I'll just give you the quick, like, gossipy side of it.
My favorite.
Is that, well, okay, within English studies, there's big divides between the disciplines, which I didn't even know, like, creative writing was a different discipline than rhetoric and composition, than English lit. I just kind of thought all writing was writing, you know, yeah. We're all trying to teach writing. But within like the academy, like in these departments, there are disciplinary divides. And a lot of the times MFA candidates who want to teach creative writing will end up teaching first year writing because there are more open sections. It's a required course. And so for me, I was kind of resistant to first year writing, but then once I got into it, I realized how much I love that classroom for the different kinds of things we can do, the different students that are in there. So I'm just kind of writing about how we can speak to maybe those MFA candidates who resist teaching first year writing, to reframe it. And then also to look at different professional pathways, because not everybody's going to end up or want to end up teaching at an R1. You know, there may be like art schools or community colleges that they want to teach at as well.
Interesting. Well, I like that you say that you love being a first year writing teacher, because I wasn't sure if that was, you know, you never know if your dissertation is like, this is hell on earth, or this is my greatest joy ever. So it sounds like you're kind of right in the middle, leaning towards more that you like it.
This definitely joy, you know. So, you know, I started teaching first year writing back in, I want to say, 2016 as part of my MFA program. And what I love about first year writing, I'm such like a, like, you know, here's what I love about it. But I love the fact that a lot of, a lot of people don't like teaching the class because they feel like students are going to be resistant because it's required, and they're going to be like, I don't want to be here. It's not, writing's not part of my major, or, you know, they've had bad literacy experiences. But for me, that's an opportunity because, you know, I believe in the transformative power of writing. So I welcome the haters, as I say, because they don't really hate writing. I mean, some do, but most have just had bad experiences in their past that have made them insecure about their writing. So I like to be able to just kind of talk about the transformative elements of writing with these folks. I also think it's like, honestly, that probably one of the most important classes in a college curriculum, because it's often the only required writing course a student will ever have to take. So that's why I think it's so important that we, and why I did a whole dissertation on why I think it's so important that we do our best in this class and just pull from other teachers, their strategies and things like that. So I think those are the reasons. I also think it's a hugely like important class just for democracy. Like, you know, like how are we articulating our ideas, critical information literacy? There's a lot that goes into the first year writing classroom.
I love that. And you might get a kid that like never knew how to express themselves. And then they take a class with you and they're like, oh my gosh. And then they can advocate. Cause that's the thing, like kids, once they learn how to advocate for themselves, it carries over into every area, getting jobs in front of city council, exactly. You know, in front of people that aren't honoring them. Like, and if you don't know how to communicate, and you don't know how to even write your feelings down. I remember my grandmother, I was helping with her towards the end of her life. And she's like, why are you always writing in your journal? And I'm like, because I'm introspective and I want to think about what's going on in my life and process it. And she's like, I don't think I'm introspective at all. Mm-hmm. And she's like 96.
Right.
It's like, oh my God, what? I think too much.
Right, exactly.
Like, you're not introspective at all. Like, you're 96 and you have like 8 children, and what? I'm so confused.
She had no time, I guess.
I love it. I love it. No, she had time. She'd been laying in her bed at 5 years at that point. And I'm like, what are you doing and laying in this bed? Like, oh my God. So tell us, you just had a book released, correct?
Yes.
Tell us about that.
9th. Yes. So that's the kind of academic work that I'm interested in. But my dissertation also connects to the creative work, because I'm looking at and asking folks, like, how do you make your first year writing classes creative? How do you pull from your own writing experience to connect to like the learning outcomes that your institution has, right? So the book that just came out for me was my second collection of poetry. And that's right. So, you know, so these are how these things interact and like inform each other. The poetry collection is like, let's, you know, be over here talking about nature and environmentalism and technology and desire and all of these things. Yes. So that's what I was writing about in that book.
And that is your third, don't you have, how many books? You have 2 poetry books.
That's my second poetry collection, and I have 1 nonfiction book as well.
Yeah, so congratulations.
Thank you.
And then tell us about Flan.
So thank you for asking. We started a writer's collective. So basically what was happening is, so I started writing The Nature Machine, these poems. A lot of them were in quarantine. So mm-hmm. I started writing the poems in quarantine, and I was teaching at Ole Miss at the time, but then I came back to Florida and we were teaching online. So I lived here for a year and I stayed with my grandmother and I wrote the poems. But this was also connects to Flan, because it was really rethinking our relationships to each other. You know, there was a time where we didn't know if we were going to be able to go out. You know, it was really intense. And then so after quarantine and just kind of after everything that was happening, was just really rethinking and thinking about community and what that means to me. And then it also, this idea for Flan kind of emerged too when Elon Musk was trying to buy Twitter, honestly, you know. And it was like, well, these billionaires can come through and buy these platforms that writers spend a lot of their time and energy trying to build up their platforms as writers. And these billionaires can come through and buy them. And then like, what's the ethical response? You know, people were talking about leaving Twitter, or, you know, he's deplatforming people, or the algorithms, or, you know, the system. So really thinking about how can we operate outside of these systems. And something like social media is so individual. You have your account, your followers, all of that, you know, and really thinking about like, what if we just kind of pull collective resources in terms of, you know, starting a newsletter where we all contribute, and then we all try to get, you know, subscribers, and then we share audience, and just like, can that, what will that look like? And so we have a newsletter, and we are You know, part of the newsletter also is doing a calendar of events. So folks can submit their event calendar and they can also submit work because we do guest posts as well. It's really about that, shining a light on other folks. And so there's like 7 or 8 of us as collective members, and we have folks in St. Pete and we have them in Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, Jacksonville area. So we try to, you know, get a range of geographies in Florida and artists and poets and, you know, different kinds of genre writers as well. So that's kind of how Flan has started. And now we're, you know, building from there.
So we are using the acronym FLAN, but that stands for Florida Local Artist and Writer Network.
And that
is, you can find the new or sign up for the newsletter. How?
FLAN.substack.com.
Love it. Thank you for sharing. Cause I was curious too.
Yes. And that's the thing, we're doing guest posts and, you know, events, please share events, guest posts. And then in the future too, our collective will be cycling on new members, because we're like really thinking intentionally about sustainability. So like after every 6 months, basically we're going to like reevaluate, you know, if we want to cycle off and still support each other. And so part of that is we're also helping promote each other's events and going to each other's events and just being in community and just having fun.
I love this idea though. And I love that the sustainability aspect of like cycling in and out, and it doesn't have to be like so set in stone. And I'm really resonating with that as a nonprofit executive director. And right. What is sustainable? What all these models that are just like, you know, grind, grind, grind. And I'm like, wait a minute, what is going on here? Like, yeah. So I love that. I love that to be thinking and having these kinds of conversations about, you know, what works and what doesn't, and being okay to test things out and let things go. You know, you don't have to be 100% perfect. And I think that's really great. So you're working on your dissertation. Mm-hmm. What is a typical day look like for you as a writer?
Ooh, so I just finished. Okay, so there's two versions of that answer. The first version is, you know, during work, you know, I teach. So the semester is jam packed, but I try to get my writing done in the morning. So I'm going to give you my summertime version. This is like my intentions for the summer, calling it Art Girl Summer, you know. So.
Love you.
It's Art Girl Summer. And what my ideal day is going to be looking like is I'm going to get up around 7:30. I'm going to get directly to writing. I'm going to write from like, you know, have a little breakfast in the morning, some yogurt, some fruit. Then I'm going to start writing from like about 8:30. I like to write in the morning from like 8:30 to 1:30 or 2. That's mm-hmm. when I find myself to be the most engaged and like with it. Yeah. Anything after that, you know, loose. Then I want to go to the gym or some kind of walking, because I think that's important for creativity. And I haven't been to the gym in like 9 months. So don't hold me to this schedule, but this is like my ideal day, you know.
Got it.
And then I go to the gym. Then I'll meet up with some friends for like a little beach moment or a little pool moment or a little mocktail moment, because I like to socialize, you know. Yeah. And then I will be in bed around like 9:30, 10, get up and do it again the next day.
I love it. I love that you're going to bed at 9:30 or 10, but you're still having like your social time too. It's great.
I love to be social, but I love to sleep as well.
I think that's so good. And it's good, like, even if you don't have the space yet to have a life like that, anyone who's listening, you can start imagining your ideal day as a writer and start like manifesting it, which I believe in that, to have that, you know. I would think about that too. Like, I would be like, wake up, have sex, let's throw that out there. Do some writing, have some lunch, have some more sex.
Yes.
Do some more writing, then exercise, yoga, whatever, swim.
Well, you've already been doing exercise.
With all this, I know, but maybe the days that I, you know,
take a break.
Yeah, take a break, then I'll swim. and then go out with friends. I like to do that in the evening. So that sounds like the ideal. There was an interview with Keanu Reeves, and that's what he says. Wake up, have sex, eat, have sex. Like,
yes. He's a role model. He's an inspiration.
He's a role. My kid said it to me, actually. Saying all that. It's like, I've raised you well, child. So how has your writing process changed over the years?
So it's interesting to ask that after my ideal day, because my ideal day that I just said is like such a breezy, like privileged day, you know, to have all that time. And I think, like, I was talking to somebody recently about, this is the first time in my life where I felt like I've had time. Like, I feel comfortable in my career. I feel, you know, emotionally comfortable. Mm. I feel financially comfortable, and as much as any creative can, and, you know, living in St. It's like, what does that even mean? But, like, whatever. Mm. So this is the first time where I really feel like I've had the time, and my writing is getting to be where I want it to be, or where I think it could be, right? But, like, previously, I've always worked multiple jobs. I've always been a working class writer. You know, like in grad school, I was freelancing. I was writing as a reporter. I was reviewing theater. And then after that, I was adjuncting. And as like a first year writer, you know, writing person, creative writing person, I was doing all of these jobs, right? Which is really spreading thin. So I would write whenever I could, often at work at my desk jobs or whatever, you know? To be honest with you. And I would work over the summer. I was a summer camp counselor, then a director for a while. So it was really about taking moments when I could. And it's always in the morning for me, because if you've been working at night, it was really hard for me to stay focused. I just want to sleep, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's how my process has changed is, you know, and I also though have read, And I believe this personally as well, is like, even if you only have 15 minutes, like, you can get a lot done in 15 minutes. 15 minutes every day will add up over time, right? So sometimes thinking about it in the aggregate or the long term is really helpful. And obviously, we would like more than 15 minutes. I like big chunks of time to write, of course. But if you only have that, you can still get a lot done. So I would always kind of think about that. What can I get done? And then try to really savor the moments that I had. So I would say that is what's changed in terms of the time-wise. I also think that where my writing process is now, and a tip that I like to give my students is, I'll begin by revise. Like, if I write something the previous day, I'll begin by revising what I wrote the day before. And I think that helps me. Because when I'm first writing, you're getting into the flow state, right? You're getting into the groove. But like revising, you're looking over the words, you're reading them, you're revising. So you're getting the voice back, you're getting back in that headspace. And then when you're kind of hitting the flow state, like, then you're able to start writing. At least for me, that's been how it's working.
I love that. So you've kind of mentioned some of your major themes. Why those themes? Why are you drawn to them?
I often write a lot about Florida, and, you know, when writing about Florida, and I think living in the state, you know, you off mic, you were talking about how you were kayaking yesterday off Fort DeSoto, right? It's just like, we're surrounded by such natural beauty. And that's something that a lot of the times gets overlooked, I guess, because it's about the tourism or about, you know, whatever, but there's a lot of natural beauty around us. And the sad part about that is there's also, it's precarious, right? In terms of what's happening to that natural beauty because of, in a lot of ways, how we've treated it, right? So I think that just growing up around that makes me really interested in what's happening in the state environmentally. Mm-hmm. So I write about that. And then with technology, it really changed over the pandemic because we weren't able to interact. And so I thought a lot about how technology has changed my relationship to, you know, people, to writing, and to nature itself, and also to my own body, like my own physicality. So that's why those themes are kind of reemerging, and I'm very interested in them right now.
I love that. Yeah, it was wild yesterday because you can go off of kayaking off Fort Tissot and it costs $5 to park for the day. It's just like you have access to all this beautiful space right in the city, and sometimes we just like drive right past it and don't even notice it. It's really just magical and great, you know. So
it's beautiful.
What would you tell your younger writer self?
Stop drinking. Stop drinking. Go to bed early, drink more water. What I would tell my younger, I'm joking about that, but that's really true. Like, I think this is on my mind because I was actually talking about it today with a younger writer, and I got asked this question because my book talks about recovery and about my own journey with recovery and everything. So I think that too, like just knowing the fact that, you know, I have a lot, I quit drinking, I was able to focus more on the writing. It gave me a lot more time and a lot more clarity and introspection. So I would say that. I would also say, take, you know, as many classes and formal classes at, or not, you know, doesn't have to be at a university. It could be community-based classes like Keep St. Pele. Like those are really good spaces to try new things outside of genre or whatever, you know. I would say that. I would also say just read outside of genre and don't limit yourself. I feel like when I was a younger writer, I wanted so much to be taken seriously as a writer. And that meant to me writing serious things, writing, you know, William Faulkner, Shakespeare, whatever it is, you know. And it's like, just don't limit yourself and limit your creativity, because there's a lot of cool work being done in a lot of different genres, like sci-fi or horror or just all these like genre romance, you know. And when I was younger, I thought genre fiction was not something that I wanted to be doing if I wanted to be a serious writer, you know. And it's like, well, that's boring. You know what I mean? Like read a lot and try a lot of things and see what sticks, see what you like, and don't box yourself into one of anything.
Yeah, I have a 17-year-old child, and he, like, I'll come into his room and I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, oh, I'm watching this like guy play this video game that is based on Mars, but it's in the year 1923. And like just the way that his brain and the things that he's drawn to, I'm just like, none of them are like a specific genre, the stuff that he's interested in. It's all over the board. Like his little sister, my child is adopted, but he has a younger sister. Mm-hmm. His younger sister is into goblin core. I was just like, what is goblin core? And it's like mushrooms and like the whole bedroom is full of mushrooms. Like they want mushrooms everywhere, and like the Shire and all this. And I was like, oh my God, these children are so fascinating. They're breaking all the rules, and I just love it. So it's I know, right? Like you can write. I almost said goblin porn, but goblin.
That's what I was like. I don't know what I had heard. Goblin porn. I didn't know what I heard there.
It's not bad. This child is 9 or 11. I don't know. Still, but it's just like I was like, what is this? They, you know, I'm growing mushrooms, Maureen. She tells me. I'm like, oh my God. Oh, right. So it's like all bets are off. And it's kind of exciting because you're talking about the environment, like this, the state of the world right now, it's kind of like all bets are kind of off, like create your own reality. Cause the reality that we think we need to be living, it's not looking that great, you know, the what they're selling us. So why not create your own little Shire somewhere where you grow mushrooms and, you know, just like Spaceman.
As long as it's fun to you, like your art, and you keep your fun engaging, your art and your practice engaging to you, then that's all. I don't know, because that's what's really important to me right now, because you can't predict how people are going to respond to your work, how they're going to receive it, you know. And if you spend all your time thinking about the things that you should do or you should be writing, that's just super limiting, when maybe you just need to write some goblin fanfic, you know, or whatever. No. Like your audience will emerge, or your mushrooms will emerge, or whatever, you know, is emerging, and that will be really sustaining and like what you want and what you need.
Yeah, like the Daisy Jones and the Six book, the Riley Keough, I guess that's how you say her, she's who plays the lead in the Hulu version of it, the series, she said she looked at fan fiction for the book. Yes. To decide how she should look. And I was like, that is just so cool. And these are like 20-year-old kids that are like freaking out over this book. And I'm like, this mm-hmm. is cool. Like, this is, it's just, I love that, you know, and it's all creative. It's all creative. It's all over the board. And I just love it so much. So a couple more questions. Tell us what you're reading right now and, or who are some of your favorite authors or poets?
So I'm reading zines right now. So I mean, literally what I was reading last night was Heather Sellers, Where Am I Now? It's an essay that she then put, I think, as a little zine. It's really cool. It's like an essay. Caitlin Crockett's Freak Accident zine. I'm working on a zine right now for June for Pride Show reading that I'm doing at Space, that Chad Mize's quarterly art space. So I've been reading zines. I mean, that's what I've been reading lately. Some of my favorite writers, I have so many, but the ones that I think that I like to talk about that have changed or opened my kind of idea to what poetry can be, I would definitely say C.D. Wright. She has a book called One Big Self that mixes non-fictional techniques like interviews and things like that with photos. And it's set, the book is about what's going on in a prison in Louisiana. It's a really powerful book. And C.D. Wright is one of my favorite poets. I also really like Mary Roofley. She has this book called Madness, Rack, and Honey that I think any poet or nonfiction writer should read, or it's so good. It talks about poetry, but it talks about fear. She's such a good writer. I also really like D.A. Powell, who, you know, is a writer who kind of a formalist poet, but like breaks forms in some really cool ways. So those are some poets that I always see myself returning to and thinking about their work.
You mentioned zine. I grew up on Comet Bus. Aaron yes. zine. Yeah, that we would religiously go to Downtown Books and News in Asheville when I lived there in my 20s and get his new issues of his. And then I think he started a small press, or I just love that kind of do it yourself reality. And he even made his handwriting, because he has this beautiful print, into a typeface. So he used to hand write all the books with this very specific print, but then he just turned it into a typeface. And I thought that's that was amazing. Yeah, it's so cool. But so Comet Bus, punk rock music scene, exactly. Early 80s. Yeah. But it was just about him like going all over with punk rock bands and what that life was like. But I just love the idea that his handwriting became a font. And it was so comforting, because I love fonts, to see his
that's really cool. Thank you.
Yeah, and we do that with our younger kids. We teach them and have them do zines. It's just such an empowering, easy way to publish. Mm-hmm. You know, all you need is a copy machine to get your work out. And that was huge in the early 90s with Riot Girls and in mm-hmm. the punk rock scene, having the zine culture. And so I'm grateful that it's coming back. So one more question. Let's get do you have your like elevator pitch, lightning strike piece of advice for other writers?
Use a period instead of a comma.
I like that.
So I don't know why that's the first thing that pops to my head, but I'm like, shorter sentences are often impactful. So if you're noticing, and you know, because I say that because a lot of people do get anxious about their grammar. And if we're using a lot of commas, sometimes we can just use a period and have shorter sentences. And that what can be more impactful for the pacing and the rhythm. And it just also cleans up any grammar if you are uncomfortable with those kind of choices.
That's so funny, because sometimes I'll do text messages and it's like, I'll see you soon. Have a great day. Love you. Like, really just like, and I actually add more commas, and because I'm so like direct in the way I communicate. Some people are like, are you mad? And I'm like, no, I just get to the point. Like,
exactly. Well, that's a different rhetorical. The text messaging is a different vibe. Because those have different like rules and stuff, you know.
Sometimes that happens though when I write a column for the Artisan magazine. I'm like, oh, I need to get a little bit more. I'm just so direct the way I communicate. And it's really funny. I have to add a little more to it because periods a little too much. So I think that's funny.
Well, then my other piece is, of course, disregard anything that I say. Use what she serves you and what doesn't. You know, I really believe that's actually some of the best advice, right? Because we get so much criticism and feedback. I would say my other piece of advice, though, and this is what I tell my students, is like, try to be in community with other writers in a real supportive way as much as possible. Go to their readings, support them at their events. You know, ask the library to buy their books, people that you like, people that you want to support. That is really one of the main reasons, like, you know, for me, what's been really sustaining and what I've talked about recently at my book release was the fact that times are really hard right now. It really sucks to be in Florida for different reasons. I mean, it's also great to be in Florida, but it's hard to be in Florida right now. Mm-hmm. You know, if we don't have community and our friends and the people that we support, because they need support in terms of like, you know, as a person, right? Yeah. So that's been really important for me, like going to the bookstores, going to the events. Yes, I am in a moment where I like to go out and have a little mocktail, but you know, at the same time, like be in community because we need that right now. You know, you probably need that, right? We all probably need that right now. So I think that it is about the writing, but for me, it's so much more about being with other writers and staying engaged, talking about writing with other people, hearing what they're working on. That's the fun part, because writing is so, we do it by ourselves most of the time. It's isolating. It can be really lonely. And so being in community is I think fun, and it can be difficult, especially for people who might be a little bit shy or whatever, you know. And so I just I try to tell my students that, you know, just be curious in other people, like go to an event, but like just be curious about asking people about themselves and hearing what you know might need to hear from them, but just stay curious. And I think that has served me really well.
Yeah. And other people love talking about themselves. So just ask, I tell my kid that I'm like, just start asking questions about the person. And then they, you know, that opens them up. And then, and they also feel like you're interested in them. And, you know, they may be just as lonely if you're feeling lonely as you. And then, right. You know, and then also like, many times I've met somebody and been like, oh, I like you. Can we be friends?
Exactly.
You know, they're like, I like you. More often than not, they're like, I like you too. Yeah, let's be friends. Like,
and that, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you pick that's up the thing. Vibe of somebody that you dig, they probably pick it up on you too. So, yeah.
Exactly. And that's it. That's what I believe too. Like, yes, people love to talk about themselves, but make sure you're listening to what they say as well. Right. Yeah. So then you know if you want to like be like, oh, I like you or not. You know what I mean?
That's the truth.
Yes.
That's a good, yeah, because you don't, that's a good writing advice. You don't want to get sucked down a rabbit hole with somebody because then you won't write. Exactly. Stay away from them. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's hear some of your writing.
Okay. Great. So I'm going to read two poems from the book. Let me pull them up right now.
And this is your current book, correct?
Yes. And so I'll talk a little bit about the book is separated into three sections, and each section thinks about nature in a different way. So the first section is about the environmental landscape that we see, like with climate change. The second nature is cyberspace and like that as a landscape. And then the third nature is the more internal one. And that's where I talk most about recovery. And of course, the themes like overlap and bleed into each other. But that's the way that I've sectioned them off. And then I also, throughout the book, I have QR codes. So the QR codes will take you off the page to audio poems that I've composed and some video poems as well. So that element is also kind of speaking to like the digital nature that we're currently living in. But I tell folks, you don't have to go off the QR if you don't want to. There's a lot of poems that are text-based. And this poem is from the second, I think it's from the first, it's from the second, first or second, whatever. Let's not get caught up in the detail section. Yes. But I chose to read this poem for a few different reasons. It is dedicated to my grandmother, but it's also the poem that was in The Artisan recently and the poem that I was asked to write for the You Good art show about mental health, right? So, which was in, you know, Pinellas County and St. Pete. So it is called New Nature, and the poem title has an exclamation mark in it, which will be important here in a minute. New Nature. I dressed myself in coral and kelp, then dove headfirst to drink the tides, I say to my grandma over the phone. She hates when I talk in metaphors. But darling, I'm a poet, born of deep waters. She tells me, I'm gonna let you go. Now I walk to the corner store and buy cigarettes. I quit smoking when I gave up drinking ocean water, but I still finger packs and fight my nature. Marlboro Reds, a loaf of bread. I feed the goose. He's my least favorite bird. He isn't beautiful as a cardinal or regal like the eagle. I bring him dinner to make amends for the ugly parts of me I only talk about in metaphors. I should forgive myself, I know, but buying bread is so much easier. In the park's lake, the lonely alligator sings. I've always loved these reptiles. They don't hide their teeth. I eat the goose's bread in solidarity with the gator and head back home. There's a voicemail from my grandma, but I wait a week to hear her say, next time, remember, there are some bugs who burrow without ever once looking at the sky. Okay. So the poems, I will also say they mix a little bit more serious tones like that one and to more lighthearted, playful moments like this next poem. And I'm wanted to remember the poem before had an exclamation mark in the title. And this poem is called, I'm Tired of People Using Exclamation Marks. I'm tired of people using exclamation marks sparingly. And I reject books with strict rules on grammar. Ideas about professional punctuation and advice from writers like Mark Twain, who apparently believed we should only use 3 exclamation marks our whole entire lives, which sounds so strict, like a corset, when all I want to do is strut. Darling, I just couldn't live in such a way. I use my whole grammatical life in just one email if I like a person, or in a single poem if I'm feeling saucy, like today. Even though some people say this piece of punctuation makes writers look immature, I think they are fun, friendly, and sometimes even flirty and the right fingers. And I believe anyone reading this poem could use more of that on their pages before this sentence called life abruptly flourishes its final and full stop.
Oh, I love that. What beautiful, the both of them are so lovely and beautiful. Thank you. Use way too many exclamation points.
I don't think there is such a thing as too many, but you know, that's a controversial opinion.
I love it. Ending emails. I always end emails with thank you so much exclamation point. I always end it like, cause it's like a happy note. It's like a, you know,
exactly. I think always, they're happy.
Yeah. I always end it with that. I try to do three sentences with the exclamation point at the end, boom. And everybody responds back like informal and happy. Like it's removes the formality and the corporateness.
I think so.
Oh, Tyler, I so appreciate you. Thank you so much for being you and all your exclamation points.
Thank you for being you with all your exclamation points.
Thank you for sharing your brain and your writing habits with us. And thank you everyone for tuning in to Typewriter Talks. We will be back next week. And if you want to know more about Keep St. Pete Lit, you can go to keepstpetelit.org. And until then, please keep reading and writing on.
Typewriter Talks features interviews with writers, poets, and other bookish folks. It is hosted by Maureen McDowell, founder and executive director of Keep St. Pete Lit, which is a literary arts organization based in St. Petersburg, Florida. Listen in to hear discussions on all kinds of writerly topics. Our goal is to show you that there is not one right way to be a writer. Learn more about Keep St. Pete Lit at www.keepstpetelit.org.